Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In Hannibal Lecter, Thomas Harris revealed the face of true evil. Now, in Kaari Mora, he shows us the strength of absolute courage. From the legendary author of The Silence of the Lambs comes the new novel, Kaari Mora, out now in hardback, ebook, and audiobook, narrated by Thomas Harris.
I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell, and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year. Hope you've had a wonderful break. And don't mind diving back into this rather dark pool that Molly and I talk about most Saturdays at lunch.
Yeah, it's true. And this is our first podcast we're recording in 2019, because the last one, which was the first of the year, we recorded before, because you were away.
I was away in Tunisia.
Did you have a good time?
Very good. It was very beautiful weather in the Sahara, very sunny, but, of course, very cold. The one thing about Tunisians, there are a lot of Tunisians on holiday, is they all wear their overcoats all the time. Everybody thinks going to the desert means you're going to be steaming hot. In fact, you need your overcoat.
It's pretty cold in the desert, even in the summertime.
It can
be, especially in the nighttime.
Especially at night. But it can get really chilly. And it's a struggle. I don't think you'd probably want to camp out at night unless you were real glutton for punishment. But during the day, fine. Lovely.
What sort of high of?
Well, about 21, 22.
Oh, very nice.
Oh, and bright sunshine, not a cloud in the sky.
Oh, heaven.
You know, but it's by the time it gets to, say, 6 o'clock in the evening or before 10 in the morning, you need some woolies. I got it just about right.
Did you take the jumper I gave you for Christmas?
I didn't take it because it's too good, but it's a perfect fit.
Oh, it does fit.
It's a perfect
fit. Oh, good.
It's wonderful.
Excellent.
But I haven't even put it on yet because it's so wonderful.
Well, that's no good.
Well, I will, I promise. But, so I didn't take it with me. But I rather regretted it, actually. I probably should have.
I was going to say, you should have taken
yeah,
it.
Yeah, never mind. I did take at least a part of my overcoats with me. So
okay.
The younger one of the two. Which was fine, it got by. And we went to in and out of Tunis, and we drove from Tunis to the Sahara.
Did you find that system better than the flying?
A little bit, to be honest. There was very funny. We went to the wonderful ruin, the amphitheatre at El Jem, which is where Ridley shot a lot of Gladiator. And it is in very remarkable amphitheatre.
Mm-hmm.
Very spooky indeed.
Yeah.
And brilliantly kept.
A lot of slaves were killed there.
Yeah, but brilliantly kept up by the Tunisian government. I mean, it's a real World Heritage Site in every way.
Amazing.
And you can walk right up. You go into the tunnels underneath where they used to keep the animals. They've still got the pit they used to leap out of. Oh, it's very remarkable site. And tourists, it costs a remarkable £3.50. to get in, and if you're a Tunisian, it costs even less.
Amazing.
Mm. Cool. It's well worth it. The only thing that's funny about it is the driver we have is a wonderful man called Belgasim. And I said, Belgasim, we should have some lunch. He said, not going to any of these places near here. Far too expensive. Tourists. He said, okay, Belgasim, where are we going? So he drives out of town a bit, near the motorway. And there's a set of four butcher's shops with restaurants behind. Only, of course, they've got the sheep, live sheep. Then they've got the sheep carcass hanging up. Then they've got the, you know. And Belgasim marches into this one and says, I want four of those, you know, just fresh off the sheep, so to speak.
Wow.
It's kind of, Yes,
it was a bit grisly.
No, it wasn't actually. I found it very interesting. It was very, quotes, authentic in every way.
Yeah.
And I think if the thought that the lamb across the street is just about to be hung up, you know, outside the shop.
You probably don't know this, but there's a bit of a trend now for something called Veganuary, where you go vegan in January. So,
oh gosh,
probably the slaughtering of lambs is not.
No, it's not a good subject. Not, forgive me.
Not the number one.
Forgive me. I'm so sorry.
Topic.
But we're awful. I mean, the Tunisians are wonderful people and they're very warm-hearted, but their attitude to livestock is quite extraordinary. So it's one motorway, and you know, you find sheep on the edge of the motorway, you know, and a little shepherd and a little flock, and they wander on and they wander off, and it's extraordinary. It's in many ways is rather refreshing. Health and safety haven't reached that
part.
Well,
you all would be pleased about that.
Yeah, not much in the way of health and safety, and certainly, I mean, you have to be robust, which I think is a good thing. But yes, I had a very good time. Thank you very much.
You were going to tell us about some books you read out there.
Yes, I did. I read a couple of really good books, including the winner of the Daily Mail first novel competition called My Name is Anna by Lizzie Barry. And it's a story of a girl who is abducted in a Florida theme park at the age of 3. Abducted by a woman, a religious, deeply religious woman. And the story of both girls. She has a sister, a younger sister called Rosie. She's called Emily. But her name is changed to Anna.
Story of them, not from their point of view.
Told from each point of view.
Of the children.
Well, by the time the story starts, it's 15 years after the abduction.
I can't imagine the narrative voice for 3-year-olds.
No, but it's 15 years later.
Oh, right.
And it's the inevitable television interview. How do you feel? Well, where is she? You know, how do you feel growing up without a sister? And the sister celebrates her 18th birthday. She's been very repressed by her very strict mother. Goes to the same theme park with her new boyfriend, although they don't let on that's where they've been. And it sparks a set of memories. It's remarkable. And what I like about it most of all is it doesn't have a sentimental saccharine ending. It has a really quite tough... There are times when it can be irritating, but it's a very tough ending, which, and I won't give the story away because that would be unfair. But it's a surprise, and I like that very much. I've also been sent my old friend Colin Sutton, DCI Colin Sutton, book on Levi Belfield, whom I wrote my own book about Belfield back in 2011 with Colin's help, and now he's done his own, and along with a 3-part ITV drama.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
Starring Martin Clunes as Colin.
You've watched it.
I've watched it all. You might describe it as a fascination. I mean, there's lots of things in it that have been, for dramatic purposes and perfectly reasonably, elided, put together, changed around slightly. And they blurred a couple of the names, obviously deliberately. But most of all, it's honest. It's about... Belfield. I didn't think they cast Belfield terribly well.
How do you think Belfield will feel about it?
Oh, he'll love every minute of it.
Do you think
minute.
He'll be railing and saying, that person is no good as me?
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, he is nothing if not vain. Yeah, enormously vain. There's a wonderful photograph in Colin's book, which I didn't have in mind, which I don't know where he found it, but it really captures Belfield to a T.
Which one?
The bottom one. The bottom one.
You had the other one.
I had the other one, yes.
Jeffrey's showing me a picture in the book of Levi Belfield topless, sort of doing the thing strong men do where they put their arms up to show their muscles. Yeah. But it looks kind of incongruous, like his head is really small in comparison with the rest of his body.
Yeah, he has a very small head, yes.
All his features are quite close together.
Mm.
He's got a sort of piggyish face, sort of on the body of... Well, not very well built, Matt. Well, well built, but not defined. And it's all. But he looks a bit stoned, as well. if I'm honest.
Well, you're every right to say that. Yeah, I liked it. I liked. I thought Clunes was very good as Colin Sutton. I thought it was a
Clunes
little
is
bit
a good actor.
A little bit overlong.
Didn't need 3 hours.
It didn't need 3 1 parts. It was 3 1 hour parts. It could have done them in two. Mm. I think the central bit was a bit elongated. The center, the middle part. But nevertheless, good. And I was also very interested because one of the things I did when I was away was listen to our podcasts. Not all of them, but, you know, a good selection. Just to get a sense of what we were doing, whether was I doing it correctly, could we do things better? And I heard at the start of one of the more recent ones an advertisement for a book that we had actually talked about called The Rumour.
That's the one about Mary Bell.
About Mary Bell, yes. A Rumour called by Leslie Cara. And I was very impressed by that. Either someone's monitoring it very closely, but to put an ad on the front of a podcast, about which is referred to a book which we've referred to 2 weeks before, is remarkable.
We would have to ask our producer how that happened, because we're basically idiots and don't understand any of that stuff.
Yes, I would absolutely hold my hand up to be an idiot, to being an idiot.
Me too.
But I'm not an idiot when it comes to crime, so...
That's true. I saw quite a good tweet on our... I went on our Twitter the other day. I thought you'd like this, Dad.
What's this?
Not that I want to embarrass you.
Oh, really?
Obviously.
Oh, no.
I don't want to. It says, Lil1986 says, "How can I have only just discovered Blood Ties Pod? Jeffrey Wansel is a true crime legend."
Oh, crikey.
I thought that was rather good.
It's wonderful. I'm very flattered.
I'll take true crime legend if I were you, Dad.
I'm well.
Thanks, Lil1986.
Well, yes, but thank you very much, Lil1986. I'm truly touched. I'm just working on a new series of for CBS Reality. Guys, I've got a second series of six called Murder by the Sea, which started this week.
If anyone wants to re-watch the first series or watch it the first time,
yep,
it's back on.
Yes, it's back on.
And you must be on pick because someone texted me this week a picture of you on telly doing one of the...
Yeah, I'm certainly on pick.
Most evil someone.
Yeah, I'm certainly on pick. And we're also now, as you told me recently, I'm now in America.
Jeffrey's on America.
Reels.
All his interviews on Britain's Most Evil Killers, Europe's Most Evil Killers, etc., are all now screening in the US.
They are.
So watch out, America. And also, any of our listeners in the US, please watch the shows if you can, and retweet about them or whatever, see if you can get Dad a few more fans over there.
Absolutely.
We'd love to cross the pond, wouldn't we, Dad?
We certainly would. Although we do have some American listeners.
We do. We have about... Hold on.
400?
We think we talked about this before, but both of us are so jaded, we don't know. Yes, we've got 400 listeners in the US.
Yes, which I think is pretty remarkable in itself.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
For listening.
Well, I think we should...
Better get going.
Start.
Remind me what we're calling something in the bush.
I think we're calling this The Babes in the Wood. This is the most chilling story. Two friends, two young girls, both nine, called Nicola Fellows and Karen Hadaway, lived very close to each other in the Morscombe estate in Brighton. The year is 1986. It's October.
What are the chances, Lil, 1986?
They play together after school, though they don't go to the same school. They're not quite neighbours, but they're very, very close.
Do their mums know each other?
Their mums know each other. It's a very close-knit community. Anyway, they both come home from school on the 9th of October, 1986, and they go out to play. Now, they're how can one put it? They're growing up. They're nine. They're not six. You know, they're a bit of an independent pair. And they know that one of the places they're not supposed to go is across the main road into what's called effectively Wild Park. Their mum, one of the mums, sees them for the last time at about 5 p.m. that October afternoon. Someone else sees them not much later, at about 5:30, outside a fish and chip shop. Nearby, in a parade of shops. eating chips. They've both obviously gone in and bought some chips each, mm-hmm. which is, you know, absolutely understandable. Then someone overhears one of the girls saying to the other girl, let's go to the park. It's a neighbour who knows them. Said, you should tell your mothers because they'll be worried about you. Anyway, happy-go-lucky, innocent nine-year-old girls disappear into the park. And by the time it begins to get dark, their parents are utterly distraught with worry. The neighbours launch a rapid hunt for where they are.
And they know they're in the park.
No, they didn't. At that point, they didn't know.
But the person overheard them.
Yes, but the person didn't speak to them. Yeah. That only emerged later.
Okay.
There's a preliminary hunt, and then the police get fully involved along with the locals, as is always the case, at first light the following morning, the 10th of October. Early that afternoon, two of the teenage searchers glimpse the bodies of the two girls in a sort of den which has been made in the wood. It's like a little cave, if you like, in the undergrowth. One of the people in the little group is a policeman, a police constable, who is working with a man called Russell Bishop, who has a dog called Misty. Now, the two teenagers shout, "We found them, we found them." The police constable and Bishop run towards the site. It's quite difficult to get to because you go through some undergrowth and it's a kind of little cave in the forest, if you like. And Bishop insists that he goes up and touches one of the girls' necks to see if there's a pulse.
I feel like this is a pertinent point because of the way you're looking at me.
That's right. It's a pertinent point because actually the constable said I didn't allow him to touch the girl.
You could tell they were dead, I assume.
You certainly could, yes. One was lying across the lap of the other. It was a very touching picture, but also horrifying. There's something about Bishop that clearly attracts the police's attention. He knows a bit too much about how the bodies were found. There's a particular bit of froth in the mouth of one of the girls. And it quickly becomes apparent that he is a person of interest. It also turns out that Bishop has played football with one of the girls' dads, Barry Fellows. And in fact, earlier that day, Bishop had turned up at Nicola Fellows' house to find his friend Dougie, who was a lodger with the fellows. And Nicola had shown him that Dougie's room was empty and shouted as he walked back down the path to his girlfriend, and I'll get into that in a moment, slag.
The 9-year-old girl shouted slag to his girlfriend earlier in the day.
Yes. A girlfriend, well, I should say, I'm not sure I should use that particular phrase. His latest conquest was 16. It was called Marion.
Oh, God.
But he already had a girlfriend called Jenny with whom he'd had one child and she was pregnant with another. He had something of a reputation for being
and
a lady.
How old was he?
Well, at this point, he was just 20. Okay. He was a roofer, a one-time car thief, a burglar, a general no good. I think at one point, his defence QC described him as a semi-literate, occasional, not very successful car thief and occasional burglar. I think that pretty much sums Bishop up. At least it did at that point. But what we came to know, came to discover, is that he was a paedophile. He had an appetite for young, particularly under 10 girls. A little quick background about him. He was born into a remarkably respectable family. He had four brothers. His mother, amazingly enough, was an internationally known dog trainer who was described by some...
Hence his dog Misty.
Yeah, hence his dog Misty, who was described by some friends as being on the domineering side. I'm not making any. As a teenager, Bishop developed what you might describe as educational problems, and he was sent away to a special Catholic boarding school in Worcester at the age of 15. He was born in Brighton. He ran away, hitchhiked back to Brighton, and developed a taste for petty theft and burglary and cannabis, by the by. But one thing about him was he liked to pretend that he was a little bit simple. He wasn't. He had considerable animal cunning, as will become evident as this case goes on. Mm-hmm. At the end of October 1986, Bishop is arrested for the murder of Nicola and Karen. As an incidental moment of this, one way in which Bishop put himself into the investigation and the search for the girls is he claimed to one of the police officers that his dog Misty had been specially trained by his mother to find bodies.
Why would you make that ridiculous?
Well, that was what he was like. Okay, the police examine him, interrogate him. He said, where were you on the night of the 9th of October? I'd gone out to steal a car. Oh, really? Mm. So eventually, he's arrested on suspicion of the murders. He's not a big man. He's 5'5". He weighs about 8 stone. But he is an absolutely inveterate liar. He comes to trial at Lewis Crown Court, 1987. There were, not to be too critical, a series of blunders on the police's part. There was no accurate time of death. They had neglected to do what we would all now take as absolutely commonplace, a very accurate
post-mortem.
The prosecution thought it was about 6:15 to 6:30. In fact, Bishop could say, someone saw me at 6:30.
How did they die, these girls?
They were strangled and sexually assaulted. One of their knickers was put back on the wrong way round, inside out. You probably don't need that piece of information.
No.
There was no attempt to fingerprint the bodies. There was no attempt to measure the marks in the ground. And no analysis of the blood on Karen's underwear. The prosecution depended on a blue Pinto sweatshirt, which was found close to the railway line at Molscombe, but they failed to preserve it from contamination. Bishop's girlfriend, Jenny, the one with whom he had a child and was pregnant again, said that she'd never seen. She originally told the police during interrogation, giving a witness statement, that she knew it was his sweatshirt. When she gets into the witness box, she changes her story and says, no, I've never seen it before. It's not Russell's. It doesn't take the jury very long, less than 2 hours, to acquit him. It became one of the longest miscarriages of justice in British legal history.
So who fought the good fight to, like...
Well, let me go on.
Get it sorted.
Well, let me just take the story a little further. 3 years later, 3 years after the acquittal, Bishop kidnaps, indecently assaults, and leaves for dead a 7-year-old girl at Devil's Dyke, not very far away from Wild Park. But this time, he assumes she's dead. But this time, she survives. And what's more, she stumbles out of the undergrowth, the wood, and to find a couple.
I think I remember you telling me about this, yeah.
The couple get an ambulance. She's taken to hospital.
Amazing.
And she gives the police an accurate description of the man she said attacked her. What's even more spectacular is that then she attends a lineup in which Bishop is one of the in the parade.
And she identifies him.
And she identifies
she's
him.
She's only seven.
Even though he's deliberately covered his hair with water and sleeked it back so that he won't look the same as he did when he attacked her.
Oh, my goodness.
She unequivocally identifies him. That seven-year-old girl took Bishop off the streets.
Wow, that's amazing.
It is an extraordinary story. He's given, effectively, 14 years, a minimum of 14 years.
Are they allowed to bring up those? You can't try more than one thing at one time, can
no,
you?
No, you can't. And no, it's called similar fact evidence.
Yeah.
But no, they couldn't. But what they did do, and what it effectively concentrated everyone's mind on, was the fact that Bishop must have been guilty of Nicola and Karen's killing.
Yeah.
He doesn't kill the seven-year-old. She survives. And thank the Lord, I hope she's in fine form. She's never been identified.
Good.
And I hope she's having a very good and happy life.
Me too.
Fulfilled in every way. She will now be quite a lot older.
But a bit younger than me.
Just a bit. What happens next is extraordinary. There's a re-examination of the case. DNA processing is getting more exact and more forensic by the day. And perhaps even more significant, in 2005, the old double jeopardy law, you couldn't be tried again for a murder, is repealed. This incentivises, not a word I like, but I know what I mean, the Sussex police to take an even closer look at Bishop for the Nicola and Karen killings. At first they don't manage it, but then as time passes and new DNA testing works, they find that in their original evidence there's a piece of sellotape here on Karen's forearm, which contains Bishop's DNA, skin flecks.
Nice.
They also re-examine the Pinto T-shirt that was effectively discredited at the original trial and re-examine it and it points out that not only does it contain soil samples from where Karen and Nicola's bodies were found.
Yeah.
So it a direct link. It also has Bishop's DNA on it.
Great.
So now Bishop has now been in jail, of course, since 1990. He's been trying to get out because, after all, I've served my 14 years. Not surprisingly,
no
one is at all keen to allow Bishop, who by now is extremely streetwise. He knows exactly what's going on. He always has done, to be honest. He's a manipulative, violent paedophile. Finally, there's full reinvestigation. And in May 2016...
My goodness.
30 years after the murders.
But he's not been released from prison.
No, he was kept in jail.
Okay.
Finally, 30 years after the killing of Nicola and Karen, Bishop is rearrested in a police station. He's taken from jail to a police station and charged. He's arrested and charged with the murders. This time, the prosecution is led by a man whom I know well, Brian Altman, who prosecuted Levi Belfield. He becomes the prosecution QC in the case against Russell Bishop for the Babes in the Wood murder. It comes to trial at the Old Bailey in the late autumn, 2018, just last year.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, on the 10th of December, 2018, almost exactly 32 years after the crimes, Bishop is convicted. And there was a BBC documentary this week about the forensic clues in the second trial.
Interesting.
And very, very interesting. But Altman was absolutely clear. He said to the jury, in terms opening the case against Bishop, I will tell you of a similar case, the seven-year-old, but I am not relying simply on that similar fact
case. I've got more.
I have got forensic evidence which undeniably connects Bishop with the bodies, the Pinto T-shirt, and therefore the killings. The jury takes 2.5 hours to convict Bishop of the crimes of killing Karen and Nicola. And he gets a minimum sentence of life with a minimum of 36 years, which will make him worry to survive for a further 36 years. I should remind you that he was 20 when he first committed the crimes. He would spend probably the longest period of time ever in prison of a British prisoner. He would have been in prison been in jail for 64 years. He was actually born in February 1966. It is an extraordinary case, and one which I think is kind of heartrending, because those poor girls, the evidence of the families on the documentary this week, for example, the mothers of the two girls, both marriages broke up, both had married again, and they talked heartbreakingly about what it had been like to live with the knowledge that whoever killed their daughters was still free. never brought to justice.
But they knew that it was him.
Well, they...
Not necessarily.
No, he was not convicted in 1987.
Yeah.
They knew that someone had done it.
But when the seven-year-old girl identified him, again, they couldn't say for sure.
They couldn't be sure, could they? And among the many awful elements of this case is that Bishop did his absolute best to blame Barry Fellows, Nicola's dad, for the killings. They'd played football together. They were friends. He'd abused his daughter. Nicola had told him that Barry abused her. I mean, it was typical of a man for whom the word despicable is just not good enough.
I mean, it's awful, but he definitely would have been a repeat offender, wouldn't he? So.
No question. To have let him out of jail. Caught.
Yeah, that would have been...
Would have been a catastrophe.
A bad idea.
But... Justice has to be served, and he has to be convicted.
What happened? Sorry, just talking of sexual offenders. What happened with Mr. Warburton or whatever his name is? Not the bread man, the taxi driver.
War boys. Yeah, he's still in jail.
They're going to just keep him in there. Do you think they'll find a way?
I think they have found a way.
Okay.
Yeah. No, War Boys remains in jail.
Good. Well, I'm glad that we're doing what we can to keep these people off the streets.
I think it's important to remember, though, and to be fair to the Sussex Police and the original investigation, DNA was really in its infancy. And the whole concept of crime scenes and, you know, scenes of crime officers and tents and those suits to prevent contamination and make look like spacemen and those funny shoes that you cover up with things. Wasn't happening in 1986.
Yeah.
It was a different policing world in every way. And I think it's very harsh to judge them on the basis that, well, it was obvious. That's
funny, because other cases we've done, we have been very critical of mistakes of the police, but it's just this one you feel more was a different, like they were trying, but it was a different time.
Yeah, I think it was a different time. I think also that... They were dealing with a very, though he liked to appear simple, a really quite sophisticated offender.
And would you say that those kind of cases, like, I suppose, the Soham murders, him, the girl that got kidnapped and put in the Shannon Matthews, I know she didn't die, that, like, more often than not, any of those sorts of cases are somebody known to or local in the community, aren't they?
More often than not.
Common.
I mean, the other kinds, the random killers like Belfield, are very rare by comparison. Or Peter Sutcliffe, Yorkshire Ripper. Mostly, it's someone in the area who knows the family, who knows the girls, who has a relationship or some distant way.
And he must have built that little hut in the woods. That must have been like a thing he knew, a place he'd made.
I think, well, he may have, how can I put it, made it a little bit more, a little less obvious. and made sure that he knew about it.
Yeah.
There were a number of sightings of him walking away. Again, I'm trying to be kind to the Sussex police here. There were a number of sightings of him walking away from the wood at the time in which the girls were thought still to be alive. He almost certainly doubled back if he'd seen them go into the wood and said, "Would you like to come and see my den?" or some such. You know, those familiar ones, Belfield used it with Millie Dowler, you know, something to do with my dog. You know, it's the classic lure. But there is something particularly unappealing, brutal, about Bishop. Not only because he left a seven-year-old for dead, but before that, he'd quite, without a moment's hesitation, killed 2 9-year-olds for his own sexual gratification. It beggars belief what happened to those two. At one point, one of the neighbours said she thought she heard a child scream, but thought nothing of it. You know, is it?
Yeah, it's so hard to.
It's hard to know, isn't it? You know, this is a council estate on the outskirts of Brighton, surrounded by countryside.
Mm.
It's a bit run down, sure, and it's not. You know, these are not the richest people in the world, but it's a perfectly normal environment. Would you really know if a child screamed? Wouldn't you think something? You know, someone's fallen out with their dad, or you know, it's very difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, really difficult.
Because again, of course, that woman was, of course, consumed by guilt that she hadn't realised.
I know, but even then, you just heard a scream. You don't know where it's come from.
Nope.
All you're doing is potentially alerting a search to happen sooner, but
it happened very soon after that anyway.
Yeah, exactly. It's not really do anything.
No, it's very difficult. But you have to forgive people, don't you? Forgive the ordinary man or woman in the street.
They need to forgive themselves.
You know, they must forgive themselves.
Mm.
But what I think is fascinating, this is one of the longest miscarriages of justice in British legal history.
Mm.
It took 32 years to finally nail Russell Bishop for the Babes in the Wood murders. And in Brighton, they're known as the Babes in the Wildwood murders.
Mm. Oh,
or the Wild Park murders.
Oh, thank you. Well, we'll also try and find the link to that programme and maybe we can put it on the Twitter or something soon.
Yes, it is. The documentary about the forensic evidence, and including the interviews with the mothers, is heartrending. Heartrending. And I watched it absolutely riveted this week. It was terribly, terribly good. Because the damage that had been wrought on those families by Bishop with the killing of the two daughters was indescribable.
Yeah.
It's definitely not just the victims, it's their families suffer too.
No, true. Very true.
And that's such a hard thing to get your head round.
Yeah.
How would you feel if you'd lost a daughter? It's unimaginable.
Yeah, I was reading something about that the other day that stuck with me. What was I reading? I can't remember. Anyway, this woman said, there's a name for a woman who loses a husband, but no name for a woman, or not just a woman, but a person who loses a child.
No.
Well, thanks, Dad. That was the Babes in the Wood, and it's very sad.
Yes, it'd be fair too. The Court of Appeal had to allow the second trial. They had to set aside the original acquittal. In other words, the legal process had to be completed.
Well, I'm glad it was completed. It gives me some faith in the legal system.
It may have been a long hunt, but eventually
got there in the end.
Justice was done.
Mm.
And rightly done.
Mm.
I have no sympathy whatever for Bishop. None.
No.
He was a sexual predator, a paedophile, and a murderer. He didn't classify as a serial killer because he only killed two girls. But had he killed a third, and he almost certainly would have gone on to kill a third, he thought he killed the seven-year-old.
Mm.
He was certainly a serial offender.
Yeah.
Sometimes we talk about people who you feel perhaps erred at some point, or there was a particularly abusive childhood. There wasn't. He was brought up by a respectable in a respectable family, in respectable surroundings, and went completely off the rails when he got to being a teenager. And that off the rails was
devastating.
Well, devastating to the lives of two 9-year-old girls. Mm. Anyway, let's go on to something cheerful.
Yeah, whoa. Happy New Year, everyone.
Yes, Happy New Year.
Downer.
What are you doing next week?
I am going to see my client Manuv in his play Approaching Empty at the Kiln. The Kiln is the new name for the Tricycle Theatre in Kilburn.
Kilburn, yes.
It's been rebranded. And I'm going to see one of the Pinter plays at the
Pinter. Yeah. That reminds me of that wonderful old Neil Simon joke. Because they... he said he had a theatre named after him in New York. The Neil Simon Theatre. Great, great playwright. Wonderful playwright. And he said he was going to write a play called Neil Simon. So he could say Neil Simon by Neil Simon at the Neil Simon.
That's very funny. I was just thinking when we were talking about what I had done over Christmas, and I watched... Well, I remember when we last spoke, I had watched Lamont. I got very into French crime drama. I watched Lamont, The Mantis, which I would highly recommend, which is on Netflix. And then I watched the thing you recommended to me, which I had just started when I last saw you, called La Glace, or The Frozen Dead,
mm-hmm.
which I would also highly recommend. Very compelling. I love the guy who played the lead. Don't know his name. Thought it was great. And then I watched a Belgian drama called La Trêve, or The Break, which I thought was excellent, about a police officer who goes back to his hometown after his wife is killed in a... Well, he says she's died of leukemia, but it transpires later on that she's killed in a kind of police thing that he's been running, and it's like a... You know, like a stakeout that goes wrong.
Yep.
And he's like responsible for the deaths of
four wife.
Police officers and his wife. And he moved back with his daughter to the place where he grew up. And the day he gets there, a boy is found dead in the river. And it's just, it's a small village, L town. And it's like the unraveling of this whole village. And everything is corrupt and everything's connected. And there are lots of strands
that,
and strains.
That rings a bell, that story.
It's quite old. I think it was made in like a few years ago.
Yes, because I can remember that a bit it's of that
set in a town in Belgium.
Yes,
they speak in French, not in Flemish, though.
No,
it
sounds fascinating.
And he is mentally unstable, and it sort of flashes back to the things that are happening whilst he's being interviewed by a psychoanalyst when he's being held in a police institute because they think he's guilty of killing somebody, and his father went mad, and so there's a lot of kind of wavering of like, is it real, like what's real and what isn't, is yeah. he saying, is he not saying, yeah. plus all that.
Well,
other
I'll have a look.
It's yeah, it's a big commitment. 10 hours, it's a big one. A all one. Direct every episode directed by the same guy, which I thought was remarkable. I'm going to tell my lit colleagues about him. And he came out with the story, I think, from what I can understand of French credits.
Wonderful.
So yeah, would highly recommend both of those.
I've been watching Manhunt, the documentary about...
Well, you were away as well.
Russell Bishop. This week, since I got back, those are things I've been catching up on. I've also watched a lot of Call My Agent.
Do you like it?
I love it.
It's so good, isn't it?
I think it's utterly wonderful.
It's so good. I love it so much. I'm just watching the third season now, which
well,
has
I'm
just come out.
Well, I'm only in season two.
But it's so good, isn't it?
Oh, it's just...
It's so good. So
and
clever.
And so true.
I know.
So
I'm so
clever.
Glad you like it.
Yes, I mean...
I know, it's bang on as well. It's brilliant.
It is. I mean, especially you being an agent, I find it amazingly engaging
yeah.
in every way.
Yeah, it's so funny. There's an episode I just watched where... Have you got to the bit where the company's been bought by Hisham? Yeah, you probably have. You know, the guy with the bun who buys the agent.
No, I haven't got to that yet.
All right, anyway, so there's a bit where they're having a fight. Gabrielle's having a fight with him, and he's like, you can't keep getting angry every time there's a problem. He's like, all agents do is, like, unravel problems. That's what we do. If there's no problem, there's no job, basically. And it was funny because my assistant was talking to our new receptionist, and she said when she was working for Kate that Kate said that our job is basically to... we're firefighters. It's not the only thing we do, but it's...
Well, it's part of what we do.
And when you get
it?
Working with those very high level... because the clever thing about Call My Agent is, when you watch it, listeners, if you choose to, every episode centres around an actual true life French star.
Yeah. And they get French stars into each one.
It's very, very clever. I think that's one of the things that makes it really work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very cool. I love it. I love it loads.
Well, I'm reading the second book of a new series about a new sort of form, written by a former SAS man called John Deegan. It's called The Angry Sea. And he created a character called John Carr, who's ex-SAS and sort of firefighter. Not literally firefighter. He solves security problems. Mm. And this one is based around the kidnapping by a terrorist group of the female Prime Minister's daughter. Very good story. Very well done.
Nice.
It's called The Angry Sea.
I'm trying not to use my phone after 9, so I just picked up a book to read. So I'm now reading The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, which
oh, that's
I'd
lovely.
Never read before.
Oh, you can't. No, that's,
it's really good.
That's better than picking up your phone.
I've never read it before.
It's really good.
It's really good, yeah.
It's wonderful. It's part of all of us. I mean... and we're all Huckleberry Finn in some way.
Yeah.
It is just...
bless
him. It is so beautiful as a book. No, if you've never read The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, now is certainly the time.
Now is the time. Well, thanks so much, Dad. That's great.
And, it's a pleasure. Thank you all for listening.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you in a fortnight.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows you don't want to sacrifice reliability for savings. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select LG appliances and purchase two or three select major appliances to get an additional 10% off. Save big on LG, America's most reliable line of home appliances at Lowe's. Based on independent reliability surveys 2021 to 2024 and select major appliances as compared to competing manufacturers offering full appliance lines. See associate for more details. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Exclusions apply. Valid 6/18 through 7/9.